Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Laura Lebon, the CEO, co-founder, and chief aviatrix at Infinite Flight. How are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I am looking on your Instagram and seeing all kinds of pictures of you flying around the world. I see airplanes. I see locations. I see you with an airliner's headset on, but I'm having trouble telling what's real and what's not. I can't tell if you're really near a plane or if this is a render from your game. How much of your Instagram is real and how much is fake?
I would say it's about 50%. I'm not sure. I would have to look at, you know, through the map, but we do have pictures that are really convincing now. But yeah, usually people will just look at the comments. They will call the shots and say if it's real or not.
Really? So like I'm looking at a picture of a Coast Guard C-130 and people are saying, wow, you know, this isn't real. I'm going to unfollow you now. Yeah. I'm guessing that's not real.
That's not real, no. And we actually had people who thought, like a lot of people thought this one was real.
Really?
This was taken on a PC, but it just runs just as well on the Mac. On an iPad. Even like we have Air 2, iPad Air, this runs at this quality, which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I remember when I talked to your team, Philippe, on your team in 2013. Were you just getting started at that point?
In 2013, we had been out on iOS since 2012, so about a year. Mm-hmm. It was just about a year. And we were porting the app on Android at the time.
Oh, I remember. Yes, right. Right. Using Monogame.
Right. And we showed, there was like the flash sessions or something, and we showed the app running on Android and iOS to like kind of showcase what Xamarin was able to do. Mm-hmm. So that was a long time ago.
I would not, no disrespect intended, but I would say that in 2013 it was a pretty game, but it was not something that I would mistake for reality.
Right. So that's why, like with this next update, we're really focusing on quality, and we knew like we had made a lot of progress on airplane rendering. We've using like advanced techniques like PBR, like physically based rendering. So the planes looked nice in the current update. If you get it on store today, the planes look really nice. They look super real, but the ground does not look as nice. So that's the issue we're trying to solve with this new update. Basically fixing this disconnect between the two. The issue is it's very difficult to actually have a rendering like this on mobile and also have the entire planet in satellite imagery. So there's a lot of things that we had to, a lot of technical challenges we had to overcome, but we're getting there.
What is the technical challenge primarily about making the ground like look better? I don't mean to use the word just, but I think people sometimes do that to make them understand. Right. Like, don't you just take the highest resolution tiles from Google Earth and lay it out on a flat surface?
So that's what most people think, that we just talk to Google. Most people don't know that it's not possible. Google doesn't actually allow you to query their tiles from outside of their SDK. Uh-huh. There's multiple challenges. One is actually getting the data, getting the satellite imagery, or getting some kind of vector based data to render forests and roads and cities where they should be. We opted for this because we could find a source that was acceptable for us at a price that it was a little pricey, but we could afford it. At least for some reasons of the planet. And so there's this aspect, and also there's the elevation that we have to take in consideration, because we have to find elevation maps for the entire planet. And the third aspect is making this all fit on a device. So that was basically the three big challenges. And on top of this, we have the rendering, because you could have the most beautiful planet. If your atmosphere rendering does not look good, it just looks cartoonish and not realistic. So there was a lot of effort that one of our engineers spent on making sure everything looked as real as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I know that initially when you look at a early, you know, flight simulators, it is just that. It's a tile on a flat surface. And then when they start to add, you know, some geo data to get elevation, if you're not careful, you'll end up getting sharp, you know, like pointy mountains, right? That don't look like mountains. They just look like someone stuck a traffic cone underneath the ground.
So that's something that we had to work a lot on, because, you know, if you run, like we develop, most of our engineering is done on PC. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of memory, we have a lot of processing power. But when you, you know, have something that you're happy with, you put it on the iPad and you realize you're running at 5 frames per second. So we have to make a lot of improvements, optimizations, and to make sure we don't have those pointy mountains. Mm-hmm. But we still have an acceptable level of quality. And for everything to load in the background, because you could fly. I just did a flight yesterday reproducing one of the Boeing flights, some kind of demo flight they did where they drew an airplane in the air across the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I was flying for 17 hours. So you have to have, this was on an iPad, so you have to have a device that doesn't load all the time, that doesn't pause to load, and that runs and loads data from our servers for 17 hours without crashing. So there's a lot of technical challenges with that.
So just to make sure I understood that, like, you personally were flying your application for 17 hours?
More or less. There was a section of it which I time scaled. But overall, I think it was from like 11 in the morning to about 6 in the afternoon.
Oh my gosh. You need a co-pilot. That's when you have to take a break. That's amazing.
That's what we have. We have an autopilot. This was actually a flight plan that I loaded from FlightAware, you know, those sites where you can find out where the planes are going. Mm-hmm. I just took the flight plan, loaded it into the app, and I pressed the nav button, and the plane just flew it on its own. And we had live weather and the fuel consumption, all that was actually running as well. So it was a pretty fun flight.
So this is also a good stress test, of course. You find out whether you have a memory leak after 17 hours of flying.
Exactly. So that's also one aspect. One thing that, because there's memory leaks and there's also like just general memory that you're using. With this update, we're probably going to have to drop some devices. Those that have less than 1 gig of memory are getting us into trouble, because as much as we would like to support them, you know, it's a lot of textures to load. And we have planes that are in high quality. We have this multiplayer mode where other users are flying with you, so we have to load their plane textures. So there is a point where we're really waiting, dropping support for all the devices with this update.
Yeah, that was my next question, was like, what exactly is in memory? Is it primarily textures?
So most of it is textures. We do compress it for the platforms. So we have, for each aircraft you download, they're not stored in the app itself, in the package. We actually download most of the planes and most of, like, all the scenery from our servers. And we have multiple versions. So we have 3 versions of the database for the ground, the textures of the ground. We have for Android and iOS and for PC. So that takes a lot of time and memory for us to compile everything and even store it on the servers. And for the airplanes, it's the same. We have 3 versions. And we also have a lot of additional textures, because we have just the plain texture, and then we have normal maps and specular maps on top of it to make sure that all the shiny parts are shiny and all the brush metal parts look like they're brush metal. So there's a lot of textures that actually are loaded at a single point in time. And I would say most of it is actually textures.
Mm-hmm. So forgive my ignorance, but why would you need 3 different versions of the world? Why can't everyone just load a JPEG or something?
The issue with that, so this is what we had initially during the beta testing phase or the alpha testing phase, and we were using a different service called Mapbox. So we were accessing their tiles, which I think were in JPEG. Mm-hmm. And the issue with that is that they're compressed until they get to your computer, and then to render them on the graphics card, you have to uncompress them and send them uncompressed to the graphics card. And that's a big issue because we could get into a situation where a single view, like the one you have with the C130, would take maybe 150 megs just of textures. And that was getting us kicked, basically killed by iOS because we were using too much memory. So we have to compress those textures before we get them to the graphics card. So the numbers I remember, Philippe told me we go from 150 megs of uncompressed RGBA textures or RGB textures, depending on the format, to about 16 megs total.
Oh, wow.
So that's a big improvement. We lose some quality, obviously, but it's worth it. The performance is much better.
Interesting. It seems like this is the, like, I think Infinite Flight is a good example of a new generation of game where in the past we would receive a game on a DVD or a CD. It would be massive. It would be offline and it would include all assets. And now, due to a combination of constraints on the client and lots of different clients, there's this new generation of game that has a cloud service on the back end, and there's a balance between, for lack of a better word, who's doing the chewing. Like, you have the cloud chewing, you know, up front during the build. You have the cloud chewing when assets are requested, and then you have the client chewing, and each has their own responsibility. Is that a fair statement?
In our case, I mean, there's little we could do. Even if it were on PC right now, like if you had to store all this database, I think the last numbers I had was about 200 to 300 gigs for the entire data set. And this is only for the 15-meter image room we have. And we're planning on adding a lot more imagery at higher quality. So it can really quickly get into the terabytes. It's definitely a better technical solution and a better practical solution for most people to have it downloaded on the fly.
Interesting. And does it cache that up to a certain point? And then is there like a viewport where you're keeping this information local until it's no longer needed and then you just get rid of it?
Yeah, we do. We actually do have a cache locally. I wouldn't know the technical details of how long we keep it in cache. But we do store some data. There's multiple levels of caching. There's one on our servers using the CDN, and there's one on the client. So we don't request the same tiles multiple times. And this is configurable. It's configurable by us. We might make it configurable in the future for the user. But for now, it's just for us. I think it's set to about 25 megs of cache.
So you have an update that's coming, though, that you said is going to change the way you deal with the ground, and it's not going to look like right now. I'm on my iPhone. I can see that it's buttery smooth. I can see that the models of the airplane are amazing. But if I get really close to the ground, I can tell that it's blurry. It's like JPEG-y, you know, when you move up. But you've got something new coming.
So this new update is the one that you were talking about, like with the C130. So that is not going to solve the problem of low altitude, mainly because it's expensive to get very precise satellite imagery. We're kind of aiming for 10,000 feet and above. Okay. But the experience is still like pretty good below 10,000. You see the rose, you see the forest, you see like the experience is pretty good still below. And the good thing is that the system is pretty configurable. So if one day we decide that an area has higher quality imagery, we can just put it on the server as another level of quality. And then the clients will automatically get it. So we don't have to have, that's why we didn't buy, you know, it's millions and millions of dollars if you buy high quality imagery for the entire world. But that's why we might at some point get like just, you know, the Seattle area, the San Francisco area. So you just have some key points of interest in high quality, but not the entire world.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's kind of how Google does it now in the sense of you can go to Paris, but if you go to Nebraska, it's not going to be the highest quality.
Right. There's no point in paying like $1 million for a place nobody's going to fly into.
I'm on my iPhone here, which is just an iPhone 6. It's not even the latest one. It seems like there's never any jitters. It's like it's buttery smooth. Is frame rate really important in the flight simulator space?
It is. I mean, if you go on most websites, there's always tips and tricks and to find out how to optimize your PC rig and have the app run as soon as fast as possible. For us, it's really important, especially up until now, because we had a lot of older devices that people were still using. Mm-hmm. We're still, like, every new development we do, like, there was a internal battle in the company between how the amount of features we were shipping and how fast we were going and how fast we were iterating, mm-hmm. versus how careful we were with caching techniques and making sure that everything run as fast as possible. But now, like, all new features have to go by some standard of performance. So we can't, object-oriented, programming is great, but sometimes, like, it's not good for performance, especially on those devices. So we have to be careful with the way we access data to make sure that everything is close and super optimized. And we've done some good progress on especially airport parsing and storing all the data for the airports and navigates to make sure that we can query things as fast as possible.
Yeah, I would think that you were saying that you can't be super perfect at low altitudes, but I would assume that at least at the airport level, when you're landing, you're going to want that to be as high quality as possible, all the way down to zero.
Right. So for the airports, we actually have a database that our users are contributing to. Mm. So they're using, there's a GitHub repo and people post their airport updates to that repo, and we process that, put it on the database. So that's just for now. It was for the update you have on your phone, the previous version, we actually were manually shipping things as we were updating the app. But with this new version, we'll be able to just update the database and validate all the cache on the clients. So they get new data without them doing anything.
Oh, okay. So I won't even have to do a big update, because if I remember correctly, when I downloaded this, it wasn't even that big. It was maybe 100 megs, 150 megs.
It's smaller than that. Actually, the package I send to iTunes Connect is about 50 megs.
And so it's going to get available over cell phone.
Right. This is why we wanted to make it lower than that, because we were wanting to make sure that everybody could get it over 3G, LTE, or whatever.
Interesting. What do you think about as a pilot? How long have you been a pilot, by the way?
About 17 years.
17 years. Okay. So I would assume that a flight simulator person or someone who is a pilot who also wants a flight simulator would be one of those people that would go into their garage, like find an old front end on a plane and install one of those like fake airplane chunks in their garage and turn it into a flight simulator. What is the market for a mobile flight simulator? Like, isn't it, don't I want to like take over my den or one of my extra rooms and get like the most perfect controls and build, multiple screens and all that kind of stuff? Why would anyone want to fly on their iPad?
So there's a big debate in the community and something that I see, like I was at this air show in Wisconsin, in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. called AirVenture, and I was there to talk to people and introduce the application. And there was always this stigma associated with mobile games. And I, they're like, "What will you do?" I'm like, "I work on this mobile flight simulator." And I can see their face kind of like, "Yeah, sure, okay." So one of those arcade games. So I have to force them to look at what it looks like. And then they're convinced, because they're like, "Oh, it looks so real. And it runs on iPad. That's crazy." So we have this stigma with the mobile world, because there's so many low quality games out there that people just assume that it's not going to be worth using. But we think that there's different profiles. There's of course somebody who really wants to go deep into the technical details, like they really want to fly their airplane to the maximum, quality and start the engine, with every single parameter and checklist items. Of course, we can't do that on mobile now. Like, at least we can do it. Some others might do, but we're trying to solve a different problem. We're trying to solve the problem where you're, you know, with your family, you're at your grandmother's or, you know, some your mother-in-law, and, you know, there's a boring discussion, or like there's some timeout. You're not at home. You don't have all your, you know, your big PC rig. You can just pop your iPad off your bag and you can start playing multiplayer with your friends. It's like I see it as getting my flight sim fix. And I realized that since I started, I actually don't play the other simulators because it gets me my fix. And it doesn't matter. Even when it was like a really, really early version with just one plane and a runway to land on, it was enough to get me satisfied. Mm. And there's also another aspect of this is that many people, especially in the developing countries, do not have those big PC rigs. They can't afford that. What they have is an iPad. They have an iPod mini. They have, you know, they have things that before, like, I guess you and I, when we were younger, like the first time we got into, we could get into flight simulation where it was the time where we could get a PC. But now mm-hmm. when you're like from 8 to like 13, 14 years old, what do you have? You don't have a PC. You have a tablet. So this is what people discover the app on. They might jump later, but it's a different market. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're with all the advances we've been able to do, some people actually don't feel the need to actually go on a PC and install everything. And like, because every time you want to fly, there's, you have to boot the PC, it takes 5 minutes, Windows updates, blah, blah, blah. It's just, it's a lot of friction. Whereas you can just take your phone and start playing.
Interesting. Well, then how do you find that balance between an arcade game, like you said, like a pickup and I'm playing in line at the DMV and, you know, accuracy, where as a pilot, you expect a certain amount of correctness and accuracy. Like if you move the flaps, it needs to behave appropriately. Physics are important.
Right. So we actually don't dumb down the system as much because we're for like enlightening society, I guess. We do simplify some systems, but the physics is what the physics is, right? So if you want to take off from a place where, you know, it's super warm, density altitude is super high on an overloaded plane, you're going to crash just like in real life. We don't actually make it. It's not an arcade game. It's not made to be an arcade game. We just have sensitivity settings on the controls because some people prefer it's more sensitive, but we don't have like an easy simulation or an arcade simulation mode. So some people might play, and you know, you can just do a couple touch and goes if you're in line at the DMV. And some people also do like just, you know, you can start your flight, turn on the autopilot and put it in your pocket while you're dealing with the DMV person. And then when you're out, just resume your flight. So
what does that mean, this touch and go?
So just like landing, practicing landings. So it's, you can do like a landing every 2-3 minutes. So you can do like maybe 5, 6, 7 landings while you're in line at the DMV. And then, you know, you end your flight, your score is like your time of flight or your landing count is totaled, and, you know, you've made some progress.
Okay. One of the other things that you do, which is unusual for a mobile device, if I understand correctly, is you have, is it true you have air traffic control?
Yes. So that's something that we added in 2000. Like, there's two kind of like big milestones. First one was just adding multiplayer mode where people would talk to what we call the Unicom frequency. When you go to an airport that's uncontrolled, everybody broadcasts their intentions on the frequency. So this is what we had initially, but it's not voice-based. It's a set of predefined commands, which are like pretty much close to what you could do in real life. And then about a year later, we added the ATC mode, where you can be a controller in the system. So there's people that actually play more as controllers than as pilots, and that's the really fun part.
What does that mean, though? Are you hearing them talk? Are you seeing text? What is the experience?
So it's text and text-to-speech. So basically, if you're a controller, you see an airplane that's on the ground asking you for pushback. So it's going to show up in your little list on your right. You're going to click on that plane and you say pushback approved or you know, maintain position or stand by. And for them, it shows up as a communication in a little ATC box. and they have different options to respond. They can say, you know, pushing back or something. Like, they can ask all the messages. It is not the best, because I mean, we would like to have people talk, because it's obviously a little easier, but it's not always the best when you're in public situations. Like if you're in a bus or in a train, you don't really want to start talking. So the text comments are actually pretty good. And also whenever you have people interacting directly, they're going to start insulting each other. So, that's why we kind of left it to the text based, and also it guides you, because sometimes like it's, when you're starting to fly, the ATC part of the flying is very stressful, because most of the time you don't even know what to say and you're going to mess up every single message. So the fact that it's all like pre-done for you, you just pretty much, and it's also context-based. So if you're in the air, you're not going to get any ground messages. So you can only send messages that are valid or, you know, in the context that you are.
Have people ever wanted to be able to play out certain scenarios? Like you could say, I want to do the Miracle on the Hudson, and I want to play that out and try those simulations?
Some people have done it. I mean, you can just take off from LaGuardia and then do the same flight and, you know, shut down the engines. And then you'll see if we can reproduce the same thing. Most likely, you know, same thing's going to happen.
Okay. Did you see the thing that happened a couple of days ago where an Air Canada flight picked the wrong runway and lined up on the wrong one and almost hit four parked airplanes?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, they were saying that it would have been the worst air disaster in like history if it happened.
Yeah.
But they missed it by 50 feet.
Yeah. So we kind of have a similar situation in the app where we have people who sometimes make mistakes. They take the wrong runways, and we have ways for controllers to tell them to go around, tell them to behave, tell them to follow instructions. And eventually, if they don't listen, we can just report them, and it ghosts them. So they don't actually, they can still see other people, but other people can't see them. That's actually, it triggers sometimes investigations. We have to pull the logs and records to see who said what, where was the plane at that time. So it's a complex mechanism.
Mm-hmm. So you've been doing this. This started out as a hobby, and now it's a full-flown business. You've got multiple employees. You're the CEO. You still have time to fly. One thing I'm interested in was using C# as a cross-platform solution performant enough? And now with 4 years, 5 years behind you, was this the right call?
I think it was definitely the right call. I mean, there's other, you know, programming language we could use, but we were familiar with the language. And the project was started like this. And considering the fact that the absolute original version was on PC, and then when we went to mobile, it was for Windows Phone. It kind of made sense to, and that's what the only language you could compile anything on at that time. The first version of Windows Phone was only for C#. So it kind of made sense. And then when Xamarin, you know, came and did their thing, I guess we got lucky with the technology. When I started, I remember back in 2004, people telling me, oh, you're going to get stuck on Microsoft platforms. You should use C++. Mm. And I was like, I don't like C#. It's fine, whatever. And then eventually, you know, it worked out.
And you're on a memory constrained device, on a CPU constrained device. But C#, of course, is ultimately becoming native code. So you haven't had performance issues that were language-based or runtime-based?
We had issues with garbage collection mm-hmm. when we were not careful. But when we could identify those issues, you know, there's ways to work around that. So we just went on to, like, you know, Stack Overflow and realized we were completely wrong about things. And we've managed to, like, you know, what you see on those pictures on my Instagram are things that are running at 60 frames per second on a 1 year or 2 year old device. So that's pretty remarkable.
Wow. I was looking at your communities forum, and there was a summer update that was saying, like, when will this be done? And it sounds like your users are excited for this, the new global update to happen. And you're kind of stuck at 90%, and now it's all performance work.
Yeah. there's a lot of excitement. We were really careful with what we announced because we got burned a few times. That we saw pitchforks and torches in the horizon. So that's why we're really careful now about what we say and what we tell people. We usually don't, like, dates are absolutely out of the question. We never say it's coming on that day because there's always something, you know, that might come up. And most of our users, I mean, a lot of our users, not most, but don't get it. They just assume it's just like, oh, just add smoke next, you know, after the airplane. Just, oh, let me, 1 second, aircraft.smoke enable. Like, oh, they're like... Just assume like everything is simple. So that's why we're like really careful. We know like it's a balance between announcing too early and communicating too much or too little. It's really hard because we kind of had to stop putting out updates. We haven't put out an update since December. And we made that decision because we were working on this new update. Mm-hmm. And every time people were getting impatient, they're like, well, there's not a new thing. So we're like, okay, well, fine. We'll make a new airplane. So I was... stuck on the airplane, and then, you know, Philippe or other people in the company were sometimes brought over to develop version to work on some update things. And we're not making progress on global. So that's why at some point we said, you know what, just stop shipping out update until global is ready. Mm-hmm. And that was a tough call because people are getting really impatient.
Right. And of course they're also forgetting that you have to keep the service running. Like this isn't a ship it and leave. It's a wake up at 2 a.m, the server's down.
Yep, exactly. And we've had a few issues with like Facebook login, Google login, recently something with Azure Mobile Services who like basically logging with Google was not working anymore. Mm-hmm. So this was my part. So I actually had to leave the global work to go back on the main version and update our system to completely remove Azure Mobile Services and use our own system. Mm-hmm. And that was not fun. But yeah.
Yikes. Has Azure worked out pretty well for you?
Yeah, it's been pretty good, except the mobile services part, which was something that we're always like kind of scared of using, kind of like a black boxy thing. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, all the web services, really awesome. The scaling is really awesome. Database, really cool. Now we're using a lot of storage and CDN. So it's really a great, great platform.
What do you use, SQL? I'm curious. It feels like maybe Cosmos DB might be a useful thing.
Yeah, we use SQL, and we're actually thinking of switching to another type of DB. Like, I think I was just introduced to Cosmos DB a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. So I think I might actually, I mean, we're like, there's different sections. Like, we actually store a lot of things for the user, like a lot of position reports of all the flights. And this is a lot of data that costs us a lot of money to store in SQL databases. So we might actually have to like shift that over to a different type of DB.
It seems like the fact that you've got users everywhere, that you're a global database and you don't want to have all of your writes go to one place, that kind of a global database would be a smart decision.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
So that is Laura Laban, and you can check out infinite-flight.com and download that. It's on the Google Play Store. It's on the App Store. I bought it. It's fantastic. I have it both on my iPhone and on my iPad. Definitely one of those apps that you show people when you just want to show off what you can do if you're not a flyer. And if you are a flyer, look for the global update perhaps later this year. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.